Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is our producer, Lee Cantor, and my good buddy and co-host, Todd Schnick. Good morning, Todd. What's happening, baby?
Not much, Stone. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. The Saints won the Super Bowl. What else happened this week?
Well, who cares? What's your most favorite commercial?
I like the one where the guy's accomplished everything in his life. You know, he birthed a baby tiger, but he loses his confidence when he's going to go try to buy a car.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, no, I couldn't tell you who it's for. That's the thing about those commercials.
The commercials never matter that way. For me, the competition was over very, very early. Anybody who uses Abe Vigoda
becomes
the best commercial of the evening.
Right. Betty White. Yeah, what was it? You're not yourself when you're hungry.
Well, it was the Snickers.
Yeah, but that was a great concept, a great tagline. What's our tagline? We need a tagline, man.
We'll see you in the fast lane, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. We need something better, though.
Oh, yeah. Well,
speaking of fast lane, you got some running coming up. You've been training for the marathon. You're going to do the 5K for the Cobb Symphony Orchestra? But the big thing, half marathons, what, April, May sometime?
Late April, half marathon in Nashville. I did 4 miles yesterday.
I've been walking on the treadmill. Exercising and eating right. I have not lost a thing. In fact, I think I've gained like 2 pounds since I started this effort.
Well, you're gaining muscle. Okay. On the short end.
Well, I'm still not tucking my shirt in, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's what I've been told, because I've gained weight, too. Actually, one of our guests today is an avid runner, so we'll have to talk to her about that.
All right. Well, who did we bring with us? Let's see. First up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, I'm delighted to introduce to you Miss Kimberly Douglas. She's authored a new book called The Firefly Effect, Building Teams That Capture Creativity and Catapult Results. Welcome to the show, Kimberly.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, you are more than welcome. We're delighted to have you. What prompted you to sit down and commit all these ideas to paper? Why in the world would you invest the time and energy to write a book in this day?
Well, actually, someone on an interview with me, she was interviewing me for her book, said, Kimberly, you ought to capture all these ideas in a book. I said, I can't even imagine writing a book. And yet I started thinking about it more, and I called my husband. I said, honey, what do you think about this idea of writing a book and going out on the speaking circuit? He says, I've been telling you to do that for 5 years. Why do you listen to her and you didn't listen to me? So sometimes we don't listen to those who are closest to us and know us best.
Well, that's the thing with husbands. You never listen to us anyway. So.
Oh, not true.
Okay, well, then it's mine then.
But ideas are your business, right? You're in the innovation space. You help organizations become more innovative. Say a little bit more about the work behind the book.
Oh, I have an absolute passion for helping team leaders to get better. And it started, a lot of times people ask me, why the Firefly Effect? And my company is Firefly Facilitation. So why this passion for fireflies? And I remember growing up as a Navy brat, we moved around so much that going home meant going home to Spartanburg, South Carolina. My mom's a baby of nine. I must have like 100 first cousins, and we'd get a bunch of us out in the backyard, and everybody coming together for a common purpose. You knew why you were there. Yes, it was to have fun, but it was also to enjoy each other's company, and there was no arguing. Everybody brought their best self to it, and that just planted a seed in me. And I was trying to figure out what to major in college, and I saw this film that showed this consultant coming in from the outside, helping a team leader learn how to better motivate and communicate with his team. And it was just amazing. I said, I don't know what that's called, but that's exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life.
That's great. And you've been very successful at it. You've had the pleasure of doing work with firms like Coca-Cola and Home Depot and McKesson. I noticed also, as I was doing a little bit of my pre-show research, that you've worked with the Marine Corps.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, the Marine Corps at first blush just does not strike me as a particularly creative, innovative organization. I must have that wrong, huh?
Well, they needed to do some strategic planning. They needed to decide how are they going to allocate their funds for the coming year. And they had a regular process that they used for doing that, which basically everybody got up, did their dog and pony show, and sat back down. And I was going along with that until I said, is this working for anybody in the midst of these 25 senior level Marine Corps individuals? And they said, no, this is terrible. It's not working. So I said, okay, all of the generals I need out, I'm sorry, the colonels I need out in the hall with me. And so we got the four of us out in the hall. We redesigned the whole 3-day session, real time, came back in and reworked it. And it was just phenomenally successful.
And they were willing to do that. That's what's great.
There was a lot of trust there.
Yeah.
Well, innovation is an important concept for us here at High Velocity. And in your bio reads that you're an innovation expert, and I think specifically a team-based innovation expert. And a lot of the experience I have is that innovation somehow seems to be easier when you don't have a team or a committee gumming up the works. How do you facilitate team-based innovation?
Well, a lot of times I think I talk about innovation with a little I. You know, you think about innovation, and it seems so overwhelming to people. Companies have a lot of interest in innovation right now, but I was just talking to a colleague last week. He goes, yeah, the new innovation is the fad du jour. Yeah, we've got that as a strategic priority. And yet, a lot of times that seems out of reach to many people. So if you bring it down to a team-based level and say, you are the leader of this team, how are you going to incorporate innovation? And I said to this colleague, I said, what if you took a staff meeting and you said, we're going to spend 20 minutes identifying the critical challenges we're facing on our team right now. And we're going to spend 20 minutes brainstorming solutions using some of the tools I talk about in the book, mind mapping, brain writing, and then action planning using the impact effort grid. It's very, very simple tools, but they can immediately see an impact around it.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the tools. I know that, you know, we don't have the time that we might have if we were in a full-day workshop or something like that, but can you give us a little more background, a little more detail on one of these tools and how people apply it?
Absolutely. I've got two different types of brainstorming tools that I use. If it's a very left-brain group that I'm working with, I use a tool called brain writing. And the key to that is you have three columns. Everybody's working on the same problem statement that you write at the top of the page. You set the timer for, let's say, 3 minutes. Everybody writes down one idea per each of those columns. At the end of the 3 minutes, you call time, draw a line under it, and pass it to the person on the left. So you keep doing this for a couple of different rounds. What makes it work is people build on each other's ideas. Mm. There's not this fear of, I'm going to sound stupid, because it's all anonymous. By the time it gets around to the third or fourth person, you've really taken an idea that was very plain and vanilla on the surface and turned it into something that truly is innovative and captures the excitement on the team. So that's a left brain brainstorming tool.
I like it. And so is there something to the time aspect of it, like giving them just a finite amount of time? Does that have some impact on it as well?
Oh, gosh, yes. There's something about that clicking time bomb kind of.
Tick-tock.
Exactly. I actually have a timer that goes off, and they think it helps them to stay focused. And that's why you allow a little less time at the very beginning, because they already come into the room usually with some ideas. And there's some obvious solutions, but they may not be the best solutions. So if you don't force them to build on that in several different rounds, I usually like to do it at least 5 rounds, and you keep allocating more time, because what they have to do is they have to read through all the ideas that came before and then build upon those. So that causes you to take it perhaps in a whole other direction that it might not have otherwise.
Now, do you find in your work that some people are more just naturally creative than others? Maybe they're just born more creative?
That's a bunch of hooey. I believe.
You don't think I'm more creative than Todd?
Well, I don't know you guys personally, but I'd like to assume that you're each creative, and it might be in a different way. And that's what I try and help the teams that I work with to capture, is that there are different types of creativity. Yes, we may not all be able to be a Mozart or Steve Jobs, but we each bring creativity to it. When I was writing the book and I was doing all this research on how creativity was defined, and I turned to my daughter, I was driving her to tennis practice, and I said, Madison, how would you define creativity? And she says, to be original, to do something no one else would think of. And after, of course, saying, well, that's a random question. you know, put, but I was like amazed. I said, that's exactly right. Then by our very DNA, we are all creative. We all have different life's experiences. We're all wired differently. And if you can accept that creativity, and if the leader brings that out and appreciates that different style of creativity of everybody on their team, what you get is creative abrasion, that concept of all these different thinking styles rubbing against each other.
You looked at me like I stole your question, Todd.
Did you steal my question?
Did you have one that was related to it?
The innovation for me, when I finally got a sense of how profound it was when I realized that it was, in fact, a creative process. And I don't know if you know, Kimberly, but Stone used to be involved in an innovation practice decades ago. But I would always always look at innovation and say, well, this is an innovative idea, don't you agree? And he would say, well, only if it works. It was a profound realization for me when I understood that what innovation really was, which is a creative idea that is implemented and achieves its goal. Would you agree with that definition?
Yes, and right now it's tough because companies say they want to be innovative, and yet they're very risk averse. And that's why the concept of building a portfolio of innovative ideas, some that are perhaps lower risk-taking. In fact, that's what we do with that impact versus effort grid. So if you can imagine, it's a 2x2 matrix. And the joke is, if you can draw a 2x2 matrix, you too can be a consultant. So on the one hand, it has the impact. Is it a major impact on the problem that you initially set out to solve, or is it a minor impact, a minor improvement? And then the effort. Is it a major effort, or meaning difficult to do, or is it easy to do? And when you think about effort, you have to take into account not only the cost involved, the actual outlay of funds, you also have to take into account, are you talking about behavioral change, cultural change? And it's just a very powerful experience to go through that discussion of these various ideas that you brainstormed and said, really, how much impact is this idea going to have on solving the problem we set out to solve? Yes, it may be a very cool idea, but if it doesn't solve what we set out to solve, then it's not going to be implemented, and you're certainly not going to be able to garner the support that you need to do all of the effort that it's going to take.
So what's your favorite part about the work so far, and what, if anything, do you find frustrating?
My most exciting thing, if I could say my absolute joyful experience, would be doing a keynote presentation on innovation to get everybody using this same language and then facilitating a two-day innovation session with an organization. I just did such a session with McKesson, and it was so powerful to read the comments from the people. They'd never participated in something like this before. This was 160 of their managers for their mid-year managers meeting, and McKesson, to their credit, said, we want to do something very different than we've ever done before. So we spent 2 months. This doesn't happen easily. You spend 2 months identifying what are the critical challenges, what's the foundational knowledge that people need to have before they come into this. It's like Pasteur said, chance favors the prepared mind. So you have to prepare them to bring their best ideas to it. So then on the second day, they presented their ideas to the executive team, and it was extremely impressive to see how the executives were so embracing of these ideas, and they're beginning to implement them right away.
I mean, that sounds like incredibly rewarding work, and I know there are so many people in the marketplace that look out and they see a Kimberly Douglas or a Todd Schnick on stage doing a keynote or somebody like you doing a workshop, and they think, wow, what glamorous work. You know, I'm smart, I'm creative, I could be doing that for organizations too. But they, for whatever reason, maybe are having a challenge in marketing their services. I'm always interested to know, and if with your permission, I'd like to shift gears a little bit. What is it that you do? How do you bring quality relationships and profitable business into your circle? How do you get out there and market yourself and do it effectively and get people to pay you to do all this cool stuff?
You know what? My number one ticket to success is networking and taking a pay it forward mentality, where you do first for others before you expect them to do something for you. I did a calculation at one point, and 88% of my business is repeat and referral business.
Wow.
And I'm involved in not a lot of organizations, but the organizations that I'm involved in, I'm deeply involved and committed to. And I think that's really important, too. If you go sprinkling your business cards at every networking meeting that you go to, and you don't really care about finding out about the other person or how you can help them, that's going to be so disruptive and so dysfunctional, and it really is not going to bring you the results that you want. You have to first care about the other person, and then hopefully they will in turn care about you and want to help you be successful as well.
So tell us more about the book. Obviously, it's published by Wiley. How long has it been out?
It's been out since April of last year.
Okay. So curious as to why you opted to go the publisher route versus a self-publishing. Was there any thinking or reason behind that?
Actually, when I looked at the books on my bookshelf, because I'm an avid reader, I need another bookshelf to hold all of the ones that I have. And mm-hmm. I said, what publisher has published most of the books that I read and find of value? And Wiley and Pfeiffer, which is part of Wiley, were the ones that were most represented on my bookshelf. And I was just bound to determine that they were the ones that I wanted to go after. As a matter of fact, they were the only ones I submitted the proposal to, held my breath, hoped for the best, and somebody, thank heavens, my editor, Shannon Vargo at Wiley, saw something in this book and in the concept behind it that really sparked, ignited, if you will, for her, a concept around the Firefly Effect.
Wow, you were like one for one.
I was.
That's incredible. I mean, I think that's a little bit unheard of.
And that is actually quite rare. So, all right, well, everybody and their brother these days wants to write a book.
Yes.
And that's actually a good thing, I think. I think the exercise and the process of doing that is a healthy thing, and I think helpful to market your personal brand. But a significant majority of people out there that are doing it are doing the self-published route. What would be your one piece of advice for a would-be author to get the process started?
Be clear on the book that you are intended to write. I worked with a book consultant. Sam Horn was incredibly helpful to me. And she believes that there is a book in each one of us. And that's what I tell everybody. There's a book in each one of us. It may not be the book you think you ought to write. Initially, I started out thinking I needed to write a book on meeting effectiveness because that's what I seem to be getting a lot of requests for, is how do you have more effective staff meetings? And she said, well, the book would have to be called Meeting Schmeeting because I don't think anybody's going to want to read it. And the more, she says, what really excites you? And that's when I started telling her about my excitement about working with teams and bringing out the creativity in teams, but turning that into business results. And together we figured out this is the book I was intended to write. And so that would be my first clear question to you is, what is the book you're intended to write? What are you extremely passionate about? Not necessarily only what do you know about, but what are you passionate about? And then look at your purpose for writing the book. You know, there are lots of good reasons to be self-published. And there are lots of good reasons to try to go for the more mainstream publishing route. And so if you're clear on what that purpose is, it'll help to direct your efforts.
Where can our listeners learn more about the book, purchase the book, and learn more about your work?
Well, they can definitely purchase the book on Amazon, The Firefly Effect. And to learn more about myself and the work that I do, you can go to www.fireflyfacilitation.com.
Well, before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. Kimberly, we like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to. It immediately sprang into my mind was the original name of my company. When I formed it 11 years ago, I was so proud. It was going to be called Meeting for Success Incorporated. I mean, I had the logo worked out, and I was showing it around at a SHRM meeting, as a matter of fact. And people were like, so you're going to do, like, meeting planning? I was like, no. I don't do chicken. I do the design of the meeting or the event. I do the facilitation. I said, well, the name's just not doing it for us. So for a number of years, it was Meeting for Success Incorporated, DBA, Douglas Consulting Group. How innovative is that? And then it was about 7 years ago, I worked with Linda Travis with the brand Renovator, who did a whole brand study to find out what do my clients value about me? How would people describe me? And they said they had this idea of a spark I ignited. I was a catalyst for them. And so we started playing around with what is symbolic of that. And that's where we came up with the Firefly.
So you really did learn a lot from that whole experience. You came out of that with something very productive and something that people can really identify with.
And something I could be proud of, too.
Todd, I haven't quite figured out how to do it yet, and I like the Circlenomics title for the work that you and I and Lee are putting together in our next book. But there's a commercial out from Home Depot where there's a small business barber, and then the other company opens up, and they do these $6 haircuts. And he goes and he gets a banner made, "We Fix $6 Haircuts," and I'd love for that to be like the title of a book. Because to me, that is so innovative, that is so creative, that comes right back at him. Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show, Kimberly. I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime.
Thank you both so much, Todd and Stone.
You are more than welcome. Can you hang out with us for a little bit while we introduce our next guest and visit with her?
I'm waiting with bated breath to hear what she has to say. I'd love to find some balance.
All right. Well, Todd, how about introducing our next guest, if you would?
Well, the next guest on High Velocity Radio is no stranger to the Atlanta Business Radio X family. She is an author, a speaker, a trainer, an entrepreneur, and a mom. Welcome to the show, Joyce Bone.
Thank you, Todd. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it wouldn't be, it's a great opportunity to sit down with you every time to hear your story about how you got started. So if you wouldn't mind taking a second and explaining how you, with a modest investment, being a full-time mom, built what ultimately became a publicly traded company.
Okay, well, in a nutshell, I was a stay-at-home mom. I realized our budget was too tight, and I decided to start a company. And so, as a result, I made myself sit down and write down 10 ideas a day because I was a communications major, stay-at-home mom, no clue what I wanted to do. So every day I wrote down 3 ideas, no matter how stinky they were, for 10 days. things like bumper stickers and, just craziness. And then I got to the end of the 10 days, I had 30 ideas, and I looked them all over, and I'm like, wow, these all suck. this is not going to help me catapult our financial situation. So, but the point of that is I had it at the forefront of my brain. That is what I was focusing on. I wanted to come up with a business concept that would take me as a 28-year-old mom with limited resources to a millionaire by the time I was 30. So the fact I got to the end of those 10 days and the idea wasn't there didn't stop me. So I just kind of kept thinking about it. Went to lunch with an old boss and who I'd worked for 8 years and was sharing what he had asked me what was going on. I told him I wanted to start a new business. And all of a sudden, the idea hit me like a ton of bricks because I had worked through college in the waste industry, which was one of those industries that was consolidated. There was a lot of acquisition work going on back in the mid to late 90s where small mom-and-pop companies would be bought up and then a national company would emerge and go public. And that was done in the waste industry, in the funeral home industry, in the RV, LP gas, you name it. This was going on everywhere. And all of a sudden, I was looking at him, and the answer came to me. I was like, why don't I do that? And then, of course, I had no money, so that was one little hindrance. But he had plenty of money. And he was just the consummate entrepreneur. So I knew that if as I was talking to him, I'm like, hey, because he had done that 3 times. He had built businesses and sold them to national consolidators, made bukus of dollars. And I knew that money was not going to be his primary motivator because he was flush. But I said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we found a marketplace that, we instead of being the ones bought, we could be the ones buying and then we could take it public. And that's like, the golden ring of business is to be an entrepreneur that takes a company public because it's just such a small percentage of people that actually accomplish that. So that kind of appealed to his ego. He knew my work ethic and because I'd been with him for 8 or 9 years. So we kind of came up with the idea of going into the non-hazardous liquid waste industry. And people are like, what? that's like, and I honestly knew nothing about that industry, but I did know the model and I did know how to raise funds, through him. And so I started building a business plan. I spent 6 months doing that and kept feeding him information. And finally, he agreed to be my partner on it and he lent me $1 million. Went and got a line of credit for $13 million at the bank, and I was in business. So long story short, it took me 18 months to go from 0 to $50 million by virtue of acquisition. And at that point, we did a reverse merger and went public on NASDAQ. And I remember I would walk into places and, you know, they think I was the secretary. You know, they just, I wasn't taken seriously right up until the point where I was like, you know, you cannot take me seriously or you can talk to me because I have a really big fat checkbook here and, you know, I can help you retire. So do you want to talk to me or not? So after the first couple of acquisitions, all of a sudden it spread like wildfire within the industry, what I was doing. And, you know, it ultimately grew to $125 million. And so, you know, just from, I think I was naive enough at the time to, you know, think I could actually do it. I didn't get in my own way. And that is, you know, how I created my dream. So it was so much fun. It was the easiest deal I ever did because I, you know, I had the funding in place to bring in the talent because, you know, we had vice presidents of legal and accounting and, you know, everything that we needed. So it was just the right idea at the right time.
Well, you cited two things that I want to highlight. One is you stayed out of your own way. There was no fear holding you back. And you weren't afraid to fail and just get out there and do it. And I love you talking about throwing out 10 new ideas a day. I don't know if you've read Seth Godin's new book, Lynchpin, but he talks about the only way you're going to generate a good idea is to create hundreds of bad ones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, I am on the right track.
Oh, yeah. So you and I are about to stumble on something.
Yeah,
we're
wired,
I'm sure,
for success, man.
So Joyce, you are an author as well, and your book is just about out, and you're about to go on tour, are you not?
That's right. My book comes out March 1st, and it's called Millionaire Moms, The Art of Raising a Business and a Family at the Same Time. Because as a woman, that is a huge challenge, especially as an entrepreneur or any business owner or corporate woman. It's just hard to balance because first you're a mom, first and foremost. And so, you know, a lot of people throw themselves into their businesses and they're like, oh, I'm so worn out. You know, well, you know, throw in a family on top of that and you're working pretty much 24/7. And so I created this book as a way to help other women balance their careers and their family. So I interviewed about 75 millionaire moms, and 35 of them are in the book. And it's their best business advice, their how they manage their time, their words of wisdom. I kind of had them do a reflective essay on the journey from, you know, where they started to where they are now, as well as overcoming your fear and figuring out what your motivation is. And I think that's a key point. Because when I started my business, I had no idea of the how. I really didn't, obviously, but I knew my why. I knew I wanted to change my story from how I had grown up and create a new story for my family moving forward. So my why was, it didn't matter what obstacles, and it still doesn't, that get thrown in front of me. My why is always going to drive me past the limitations and the fear.
When you talk to other would-be entrepreneur moms or moms that maybe are already entrepreneurs but are struggling, what kind of barriers or excuses do you hear from them that is like fingernails on a chalkboard to you and you try to get them turned around a little bit?
Okay. I would have to say I don't have the time and I don't know how. That tells me I don't have a big enough why. So whatever excuse I hear, it's like, you just don't want it bad enough, period. Don't be mentally lazy. Don't be feeding me that because I'm not buying it because I have three boys. They're 14, 10, and 7. And, you know, I've done a number of businesses. I've bought and sold 30 different businesses, and I'm always evolving, and I just don't buy excuses.
I get that idea. And incidentally, I've read the book. I've joined the Millionaire Moms Network. And I am Mr. Mom. My wife travels 4 days a week. I'm the cheer mom. I do the carpool. I'm the one that gets them up and ready and the shoes tied and off to school. And I got to tell you, there's nothing in my view that is anything remotely gender specific about the inspiration or the application of the ideas in this book. It is just a marvelous collection of very practical approaches to getting it done. And I was very impressed with this piece of work.
Thanks, Stone. I appreciate that.
But the key is when if you had waited until you learned everything you needed to know to get started, you never would have gotten started. And that's the lesson here is that you determine what it is that you want, the why, as you call it, and then just dive in and figure it out. And you'll make mistakes along the way. You'll make errors, but that's how you learn. And so when I hear that story every day from people saying, I'm still doing research, I'm still trying to get everything lined up and all that, and you're one of the stories I use to tell people, get over that.
Right.
Once you know what you want to do and you start on that path, the information that's available to you around the world on the internet to figure out the how is abundant, and you just got to figure it out. So I love that story about you and how you just dove into this thing.
Well, my favorite part of the whole story is she's standing there at 28 years old, and she thinks it's a completely rational thought that I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. I love that. And there's a specific story in the book, and I don't want to steal too much thunder, but I love the story that you relate, where you walk into a place that I think you've recently acquired. You're sort of into this process, and some probably fairly chauvinistic person says, "Here, hon, would you make some copies for me?" And you go and make the copies, right? And then a little later on, you're in the conference room, and they introduce you as the big cheese. I love that. But the whole book, the treatment of it, there's humor in it, there's inspiration, and there's all of these people that have been there, done that, offering their counsel. And, I mean, fully half of the book is, how is it titled, like, What I Wish I Knew? How is it? What's the title for the back part there?
That chapter is called What I Wish I Knew Then That I Know Now.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. So talk a little bit about getting the book out, though, because that's got to be an interesting process. And you went a little different route than our earlier guest. You decided to self-publish, or you went with a publisher as well?
I went a hybrid model. I didn't self-publish, and I didn't go through the traditional publisher. I went through Morgan James Publishing, which is an entrepreneurial press. And the reason why I chose that is this is a trend that's happening, and that's one thing that I've always been good at is spotting trends. I IPO'd when IPOs were hot. I did real estate deals when real estate was hot. And now, you know, with the economy being the way it is, people need empowerment on how to get it done. So I wanted a book to get out quickly. With Morgan James, it's different setup. You retain a higher percentage of the royalties. You pay a little bit up front, but it's much less than what you would pay going self-publishing yourself. So you're in Barnes & Noble, you're in Borders, you're on Amazon, you know, you're everywhere that you need to be, but you have help assisting you, you know, design layout for the covers. They take you through that whole process. So for the time, the turnaround, and the money that you can make, you know, and also when you sell your book, you get to keep the vast majority of the profit. So you just pay for what the core cost of the book is. So it was the most economical with the biggest reach. You get the cachet of being in all the bookstores because, you know, that's the first thing everybody's like, so where can I get a copy? You know, like, right. Are you for real? Or, you know, I go, oh, just, you know, swing by Barnes & Noble. And they're like, oh, you're a real author, you know. So
you don't open the trunk of your car and say right here.
Yeah, there you go. I got one on the inside of my coat here. So anyhow, I just found that it was a great mix, a great blend of the two. So that's why I went with Morgan James. And I actually, so if anybody else wants information on that, contact me because I can help you.
So tell me about the tour. You're hit the road in March.
I'm doing a couple of different things. I'm doing a viral marketing campaign where I reach out to, you know, all the millionaire moms that are in the book so that they send it out to their list, because if you're any type of marketer, you know that the gold is in your list and you have to build your list.
Yeah.
So that is going to be a key component to it. And then I'm also going out and I'm speaking to different women's organization primarily. I'm going up to Canada, and I'm doing Possible Woman here in town, and, you know, just a bunch of different speaking engagements locally. So, and then I'm also pitching to Good Morning America and CNN, and, you know, I've got some connections there. So I actually got a phone call. It was kind of strange. It was from ABC Casting wanting me to do this reality show called Secret Millionaire. And I was like, man, that would be awesome, because I'm like, it's prime time, you know. And so
right.
Anyhow, so you go undercover and you work, and then at the end you present a check for $100,000. So I said, well, can I bring a partner in on it? Because, you know, got three kids, private school, you know. So anyhow, so they said I could. So that's what I'm working on now, so to see if I can pull that off.
So you would go in this thing, in this concept, and you would work among them, and then at some point you would present some lucky winner $100,000 to help them with their business?
Right. Well, it's a social responsibility show. So it's like somebody right. who's down and out, that's trying, that does good work within the community. It was on Fox last year, and it started in the UK, but
right.
Fox brought it over to America, and then ABC bought the rights out from Fox, so it's going to be on ABC this year. So, anybody listening that wants to be my partner.
Todd will go in with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that sounds
all right.
Good.
I'll just get your checkbook out and we'll get going.
All right. So.
Well, that's got to be very rewarding too, though. I know that you do some coaching. I know you found some ways to leverage your coaching so that you can coach a lot of people at once. What are some of the businesses that are forming, some of the business ideas that these women that you're coaching, what kinds of things are they doing and getting off the ground?
Wow. I mean, everything under the sun, literally. You name it, it's in every facet. I have inventors. I have people who have licensing agreements to sell different things under college branding, you know, multi-level marketing women, you know, wholesalers, every business under the sun.
But they're coming to this collective, and they get inspired, and they get ideas, and they get information from you and some of the guest speakers that you have in this?
Right. The website is, you know, it's called Millionaire Moms, but as you were saying, Stone, it's really entrepreneurial information. It's, and you know, you have to pick a niche when you start out. So I decided, you know, who's the hardest working people on the planet? Mom. So let's do something for them. So, but it's really anybody who's interested in becoming an entrepreneur or really self-development, because I'm doing a teleseminar Wednesday. What I do is I do a free teleseminar every month, and as part of my give back to the community. Right now, pretty much most everything's free. I'm going to be adding things to the store. The membership's free. And so what I try to do is touch on things that are important to people. So this month it'll be, last month it was goal setting. This month it'll be overcoming fear. So I'll spend an hour with them. And then also I do coaching once a month for like an hour. People can call in and ask me their questions. So, but you know, I do videos. There's written documents there that you can read, and also Millionaire Moms, you know, their audios are on there. There's just a ton of information there for anybody wanting to grow their business or develop themselves.
We believe very strongly here at High Velocity about giving back to the community, and I understand that you're involved in the early process of building an organization that's going to do some of the work for returning soldiers. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I'll be happy to. Thanks for asking about it. It's called Camp Better America, and it was an idea that two girlfriends of mine had starting last fall, and then I got involved in it. And we're having our first camp May 1st in Texas, and we're really excited about it because it went just from, you know, an idea to we actually have this camp scheduled May 1st. So what it is, it's a way to give back, is to return the salute to the returning war heroes, because they come home, they've been away from their families, and let's face it, when, you know, your wife comes back in town after 4 days and she's like, well, do you really want to do it that way? You're probably like, hey.
Yeah, she swoops in.
Right.
Yes,
tells you how to do it the right way.
That happens every week in the Peyton household. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I know I had that experience, you know, myself many times. So imagine being gone for an extended length of time, and then you're coming back and trying to rebond, and you've had this crazy experience, and you're trying to get back into, and most of the soldiers have post-traumatic stress disorder of some type. So the camp is designed to bring them in, give them a safe, happy, uplifting, beautiful resort-type location to bond with their families again, to reconnect with their spouse, reconnect with their children. Zig Ziglar's organization is on board, so they'll be providing the personal development. We bring in outside keynote speakers that are, you know, the top 1% in the world to come in and motivate, and kind of, it's a hand up. It's not a hand out. It's a hand up to these people that have given so much for us. So we're so excited about it. And, you know, it's for the military families. And ultimately, our end game is that we want to have it available to all families as a vacation option, like to go as a family to reconnect. Because you know how it is. Everybody's so busy, you're going 10 different directions.
I love that. I love that concept. I think it's a great thing. Is there a place where people can go check it out and learn more about it?
They sure can. CampBetterAmerica.org.
And is there an opportunity to help support it financially or with talents, or is there a way that the average person can support it or help in some way?
Absolutely. We're trying to raise $30,000 additional dollars for May, so we're actively doing fundraising. So even $10, we're happy to get what we can get. Every little bit helps. And I'm not sure if the donation button's up there yet. It should be. But if not, you can always contact me at joyce@millionairemoms.com. But there is a website up, and certainly we'll be accepting donations. It's a chartered 501(c), so it's a tax deductible donation.
Okay, good.
Well, that's good to know about. I wasn't aware of that or didn't remember that. And we ought to put it on our Making a Difference section of our website.
Yes, we should.
So we'll, you've got our commitment that we'll do that. And Todd, you ought to be able to cover at least half the $30,000.
Yes.
Well, it depends
after
on
the
how many you go into the 100,000
thing. Right.
Thanks, Todd. You're the
Absolutely.
Best.
Hey, I'm a millionaire mom, too.
Well, I'd like to shift gears on you a little bit, just like we did with our last guest, and just get some insight into your own personal approach to marketing and try to get a feel for what is it that you do on a daily basis, you and your team, to bring quality relationships and profitable business into your circle? How do you do that? Are there some specific disciplines that you try to exercise day in and day out to stay top of mind, front of mind for your market?
Well, my team, me, myself, and I, we get busy every day. So stay top of mind. That's a good question because it's important. So one thing that I like to do at the beginning of the year, which I would recommend for everybody, is to reach out to those circle of influence within whatever you're doing. And like Kimberly was saying, it's so much about giving before taking. I mean, if you're a giver, everybody wants to talk to you. So, you know, ask them, you know, who is it that you want to, you touch base with people on a regular basis and say, you know, hey, I was just thinking about you, you know, what's going on in your world? Is there anybody that you're looking to meet in particular or any way that I can help you? And now I've had some people snicker at me going, well, you know, hell's bells, I'd be busy doing everybody else's work, you know, if I was always giving. And I'm like, not really. You know, most people, you know, they tell you something, you just kind of keep it in your mind. And it doesn't mean that you have to go, you know, sit in their office and work for them. But, you know, they appreciate the fact that you're interested in their life. So, but staying top of mind, I have a blog, you know, autoresponders to your email list. You know, it's important to nurture your list and build a loyal fan base. So I'm trying to get more consistent on that. What else? Just doing shows like this and just kind of getting out there and stirring it up. I believe all the good stuff in life happens when you're out. So when I'm in my house, I better be executing on the most important work that needs to be done. That's basically what I try to do. I try to focus on one thing at a time, whatever's the most important. And then when I'm out, get out there and connect with people. And when you're at a networking event, figure out who it is that you'd like to meet there and make a point. Don't just kind of shuffle in there and, you know, plaster your back against the wall. Get out there and introduce yourself and be friendly.
If there's one thing about Joyce Bowen that I know is that she does get out there and stirs it up.
I like to say I make things happen.
Well, and I think you have found the right balance. You struck the right balance with this autoresponder. You're meshing the technology with the personal contact, because I'm on that list because I am a millionaire mom. I'm part of this network. And they seem to come not too frequently, but about the right pace. And when these autoresponder messages come, they're value laden. There's really good material, good ideas in those. So I think you're doing that real well. And if anyone is out there thinking about how to leverage technology like that, I think that Millionaire Moms would be a good model to follow. You do a real good job with that.
Thanks. It's, you know, it's always hard to add new technologies, like, you know, so you have to learn things constantly. So that is, it's a challenge, you know, but it makes you a better person as a result, a more capable person in so many ways when you step outside your comfort zone and learn how to do things like autoresponders.
I know it sounds intimidating. And I think some people, I think it's easy to fall in the trap and overdo it, you know,
yes.
and rely too heavily on technology and sit in your office too much when you ought to be out visiting with people and making that contact.
Well, that goes back to fear of failure. I think people have a fear of failure. And to me, failure is just feedback. And if you're so busy planning, to me, it's just chicken feathers. You know, you're too afraid to get out there and make things happen. So,
well, and again, I don't want to steal any of your book revenue because I believe anyone who's listening to this, I mean, if you only buy one book this year, I mean, I just thought the world of your book. And I don't want to steal too much thunder from it. But there's a concept in there that you speak to, and I'd like you to address it briefly here, if you would. This whole idea of rejection. Give us your take on this idea of rejection.
Well, to me, rejection, people have it wrong. It's like if you have this fear of rejection, let's say I want to meet Kimberly, but I'm afraid to introduce myself. Well, I'm already rejected. You know, it's like I don't have what I want. I want to meet Kimberly. But I'm so afraid to open my mouth that, you know, I'm already rejected. So you have to kind of just reframe thoughts in your mind. You know, like, with rejection, it's like, well, I already don't want to have what I want, but if I go ahead and ask, she'll either say, oh, nice to meet you, you know, how can we work together, whatever it is your objective is. So you'll either get a yes and you'll be really happy and your confidence will be boosted, or if you get a no, well, now you're in no worse position. You just know the answer to the question. And it's, and it might be a no, not now, or it might be, you know, a no maybe later. So let me get back with you. You just never know. So as a young adult, I used to be afraid to open my mouth, you know, when I was a young girl and just fresh out in the workplace. And then I just finally realized, you know, I'm not going to die if I ask a question. So I just really encourage people to ask.
The sun will come up the next day. It always does.
Yes, it does.
And could I just interject?
Sure.
A quote that I always love from Wayne Gretzky is, you miss, oh gosh, now I've said that and I can't remember exactly.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Thank you very much, my colleague here. That was exactly right. But that's exactly what struck me, Joyce, as you were saying that, is you are going to miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So
right.
I think having that in the back of your mind is really powerful.
I think so. And for me, like with rejection, I thought, well, my brother unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. And I thought, and he was 1 year older than me, and I'm very young. So so I thought, well, am I going to have a regret when I get older of something I didn't do because I grew up having to pay the bills and, you know, there was no time for dreaming. I was working. So I thought, well, I always wanted to be a reporter, so I didn't do that. And, you know, here I am still young, but, you know, getting a little long in the tooth for being a reporter. So I thought, well, I don't want to have that regret. So I managed to get an interview with one of the major stations here, the president and general manager. Somebody, you know, got me in as a favor kind of thing. And he told me, you know, the other reporters have been here a very long time. And, you know, although you have the degree that would fit, you don't have the experience and it would be a real problem. So thanks, but no thanks. So I left there. I thought, well, you know, okay, that was, I guess, a rejection, but I'm okay with that. At least I tried. But I'm not going to let that stop me. So I think I'll just go be my own reporter. And so that's how kind of the book concept came about for Millionaire Moms. Lee Cantor and I started interviewing millionaire moms on the Millionaire Moms radio show. And that became the basis of the book. I took the radio show and transcribed it. And so I became my own reporter. And then ultimately I ended up, I've done some video work for different corporations. And they send me their questions and it says, Joyce Bone, reporter. And I remember the day I saw that. I was like, I did it.
That's cool.
I'm a reporter. So although you might not get what you want in the moment, it doesn't mean that you won't get it ultimately.
But just that one shift, that one shift in framing your mind to me just means so much. And I think it would encourage, you know, the guy out there making the sales call, the person out there asking a wealthy donor to consider a 6- or 7-figure gift, you know, to something like Camp Better America or something. Just that one shift in mind would have such a tremendous impact. So, and it certainly did for me.
Absolutely.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show this morning. I know you'll come back because there's a ton of other things we'd love to talk with you about. Before we let you go, as you know, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career and what they feel like they learned from it. Can we get you to do that before we close out today?
Sure. I've made so many. I don't even know where to begin. I just wrote an article for workingmomsonly.com, and I called it Skinned Knees. And it was based on a mistake I made. I got into a deal, and the mistake was I fell in love with the deal. Never fall in love with a deal. Sometimes the best deals that you do are the ones that you walk away from. And in this particular situation, it was a miniature golf course, 54 holes, and it was going to be perfect. It, you know, had a 5,000-square-foot game room, and anyhow, it was a great fit for my family at the time, and I wanted the cell towers on the back of the property. So I fell in love with this deal. I was doing it. I ended up partnering with somebody who was a real snake in the grass, and I wasn't used to that. And I'd had a lot of success, you know. The company I took public was my second business, and my first business was very successful as well. So I thought, you know, I'm full of beans. You know, I'm like 32. I hadn't made a mistake yet. I made all this money. So, of course, this was going to work out. You know, I did the analysis and And at the end of the day, I always do the, you know, what's the best case scenario and what's the worst case scenario? It's probably going to come out in the middle. You know, that's usually how things work out. And so I went ahead and went forward with the deal. And but I realized I made a lot of errors in the due diligence along the way because I was blinded. I was like, oh, don't worry. We'll just overlook that, you know, because this is going to be great, you know. So and it took me about 3 years to get out of my partnership with this guy who literally was looking for every, you know, weak link he could find on me to take advantage of. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I did get out of the deal. It cost me some money, but it was worth it to me because I needed to get away from this person. He was just not the kind of person that you want to be involved with. So that was a mistake I made. Don't ever fall in love with a deal. Always look at it objectively. And if you can't, table it. You know, table it for a few months, you know, like lottery winners. Put your money away for a year and then come back when your emotions are down. You know, it's like, don't, you know, look at things analytically in a linear fashion.
I articulate it this way. Some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers.
Mm. Yes. Boy, that could be the title of a song or something.
Yeah. It might be, yeah. How can our audience find you, connect with you?
Well, my website is millionairemoms.com, and I can be reached at joyce@millionairemoms.com. And you can get the book, you know, everywhere March 1st. But if you want to get an advanced copy autographed by me, you can go to millionairemomsbook.com or to my website and pick up a copy. And we will mail you one from our office, me, myself, and I. And and I have to say, it is worth the price, definitely, because there's over 525 years of experience of millionaire moms, you know, their journey, their advice. I mean, to me, books are the best deal out there. You get all this insight for just basically pennies, I mean, at the end of the day. So anyhow, thank you so much for the time today. It's been fun. It always is hanging out with you guys.
Thanks for being with us.
Well, that was fun. What's next? We're going to go run around the parking lot, or you got to do some training? What's next today?
Yeah, no. Training continues, absolutely.
Let's go to Fuego Mundo.
Hey, I'm heading there actually as it happens. So.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Kimberly Douglas, Joyce Bone, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.